The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome back to another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. We have some positive news. Is it gonna get us into the playoffs? No. But it's a nice long-term thing that happened today. Brian Bello has been signed to a six-year deal. I'm not gonna say extension because we had him for five of those years anyway. So it adds another year, and then there's a team option beyond that for one more year. So potentially, Brian Bello will be with the Boston Red Sox for at least the next 6 or 7 years on a very friendly, team-friendly deal. With me tonight, Micah Storms, Nick Face, I am Terry Cushman. How you doing, gentlemen?
I'm doing very good. I was very surprised with the news on Bello. We heard rumblings during the beginnings of spring training that something was happening between Bello or Casas in trying to lock somebody up long term. I just find it very, very, very interesting how on the day that Giolito or day after Giolito goes down that you have the Bello news come out. Desperate pleas for John Henry?
Micah, it's been a couple of days, literally just a couple.
Did you say good news? Is that what this is? I don't know what this feeling is.
Does it make up for the darkest Red Sox winter of my lifetime? No, it doesn't. But it's something that needed to happen at some point, and it happened.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think this really undoes anything that they did not do in the offseason, because we are still left with the same exact roster that we had a day ago before the Bello extension. But it does, at least it tracks with what they said they want to do, because they said they want to keep their core group of players that they end up developing. And this is hopefully phase one in that. So I'm excited. You know, I saw people saying it was too short. I think this is a good deal. And if he becomes the pitcher that Red Sox fans believe, and I think the organization believes he's going to become, this is going to turn out as an absolute steal.
I thought it would wind up being a six-year deal with two options. So I'm just slightly disappointed we didn't get another one tacked on, but not the end of the world. It was also for a little bit less money than I thought. We were kicking numbers around yesterday in the war room, and there was quite a range, really, from the low end to the high end. I think Cody was way, way over. I was relatively high too, but I thought he would end up around $70 million guaranteed with two option years that would have brought it up to about 100. So, you know, it came in 25 under, and that's not a bad thing, really. I mean, we want to, you know, stay hopefully under the luxury tax and not be perpetually over it. But, you know, not a bad deal. The average annual value of it is 9.4 million per year. He's only getting $1 million in 2024 with a $1 million signing bonus. So I guess $2 million you could say. Then in 2025 it goes to 2.5, then $6 million, then 8.5, 16 million. So a big uptick. That's in 2028, and then 2029, 19 million. That's the final guaranteed year if he's rolling and he's the pitcher we hoped he would develop into. They could pick up that team option in 2030 for $21 million. And that would be his age 31 season. So he's not going to be a spring chicken by that point. Jordan Montgomery, Blake Snell, you know, Aaron Nola, I believe, is 31 years old. So it'll be at that point in his career when he could potentially be a free agent. But Nick, let's get back into it. How critical was it?
They had to do something, guys. It's been the worst offseason in my lifetime of being a Red Sox fan, sitting around waiting, hoping, refreshing X, like constantly to see if something is going on with this team. And you're left with just questioning, what direction is this crew going? You know, their big move up until this big, huge extension here that they gave for Bayo was Giolito. And now we're left with him now having to go and get his arm checked to see if he's going to have Tommy John. And that's catastrophic to a rotation that was already trying to figure out who you're going to slot into all these different positions. I mean, now you're looking at a lot more pressure to be put on Bayo here to be your actual number one guy. Can he get over that hump and become that ace that everybody is hoping that he's going to, you know, become? That is the biggest thing that we have to see here for this team heading into 2024. I'm still left with, kind of like Micah already said, yeah, this was something that needed to happen, but it doesn't change the projection here, or it doesn't change the way this offseason's been. You have so many glaring holes. You have a rotation that has so many question marks on what you're going to fill out. You have next to nothing for protection for Devers right now. You have injuries left and right from people popping up in spring training. Trevor Story, I guess, was out with a stiff neck today. Spring training, I get it. It's just the fact that we're having these things pop up. Jaron Duran was out with his foot the other day. Everybody was trying to hold their breath there and making sure that that surgically repaired foot was okay. It's becoming that theme, though, that every day something's popping up right now with this team. And this is a 2024 roster that can't afford any injuries. They just can't. So depth is not something very promising for them right now.
Micah, any other thoughts just in terms of, you know, what it means to finally, you know, get it done with you know, a pre-arb guy? And go ahead.
Yeah, I was on the side of, I think I would have preferred Casas to get an extension over Bayo just because pitchers often break. but, you know, Nick, you had said that, like, this is a deal where he essentially now has to kind of prove himself. And I do think there is something where he, you know, he's not just on a rookie deal anymore, but I don't think this deal requires him to be an ace because he's not going to get paid anywhere near an ace probably at all in the entire length of this deal. Because even if they pick up the 2030, I can't believe I'm even saying that, but the 2030 option, he's getting paid $21 million. What kind of money are even number three pitchers going to be making in 2030 at that time? Like, the pitching contracts are probably going to inflate so much that even if he ends up being a number two, Bayo's going to be looked at as a complete steal. So I don't think he has to be an ace with this type of contract. This doesn't scream like an ace. But I do think fans are going to expect him to be an ace just because this is the one guy that the organization has committed to. It's similar to Devers. Like, you know, they let Mookie Betts go. Then they let Xander Bogaerts walk. And then Devers was the last guy, and they committed to him. And that contract, whether it you want it to be or not, he's the face of the franchise. He needs to be the vocal leader. That's what big contracts mean. And this isn't necessarily a big contract, but it's the first one that we've seen where they finally have been willing to operate before a guy gets anywhere near free agency. So it's important, because I didn't know if they were even interested in really overpaying guys when they don't have to overpay guys. But this at least screams that we see value right now. We're willing to give a guy more what he's worth now rather than just completely steal from him. And they're going to save down the road. Now, what I was hoping for, and this is just me, just because the organization has, even with this deal, they have $23 million to work with. I was kind of hoping that the salary for 2024 would have been higher than $1 million, just because you could have maybe put, say, $4 or $5 million this year, $4 or $5 million next year, and you could try to save down the road when hopefully the team is willing to go closer to the luxury tax. So they have so much wiggle room now. I would have almost rather seen them throw money at him now and save even more down the road, but that's obviously not how it works. But I'm just excited that they've committed to him. And, you know, we talked, I think, Terry, on Sunday's show? On Sunday's show, like, moving forward, you have Bayo and you have Cutter Crawford, who is still, I think, somewhat of a question mark. I think probably a good member of the back end of the rotation. And then who do you have moving forward in 2025 and beyond? So Bayo is at least one piece of the puzzle moving forward. So that's a good sign that they're at least they have somebody. I mean, they had him anyways, but you know, they're going to save a lot of money moving forward if he becomes the pitcher that we all think he can be.
The one thing that's interesting to me about this deal is that where you're potentially extending him through his age 31 season, you can try to revisit another extension, you know, maybe coming into 2029. That would be his age 30 season. And maybe get a somewhat team-friendly deal at that point. And by team-friendly, I'm talking more in terms of years. You know, some of these pitchers, Aaron Nola, for one, we discussed him on Sunday. He signed through, I think, his age 37, 38 season. So maybe you approach Bayo at, you know, with 2 years left on the current extension and try to extend him out for 5 or 6 years through age 34, 35. And, you know, Sonny Gray just got a nice 3-year deal at age 34. So it's the type of deal that gives the Red Sox a little bit of leverage later on. If we're winning again, if Bayo loves it in Boston, then I think that would be great. And we're going to get to Casas here shortly, but I feel like it's a lot easier to extend a young pitcher than it is a free agent slugger. You don't see young pitchers pre-arb get a $200, $300 million deal. It just doesn't happen. You know, the Bobby Witts, I know this guy's disgraced himself, but Wander Franco got a massive deal after only 1 or 2 years. The Seattle slugger there, drawing a blank.
Julio Rodriguez.
He got a weird deal that ranges from 200 something to 400 something, but that's still massive for a pre-arb guy. Fernando Tatis, massive deal. You see position players get those, but not pitchers. So I'm not surprised Bayo got done first. I don't know that the Red Sox, we'll get into Casas in a minute here, but yeah, so not a huge shock. Spencer Strider a year ago with the same exact amount of service time as Bayo had coming into this year, got a 6-year, $75 million deal. And he's a strikeout guy, probably will win at least one or two Cy Youngs in his career. So it's no surprise to me that he came out fairly significantly higher than Bayo did. But that was the precedent. That's the contract you're looking at. You know, you're probably not going to exceed it. You're going to come a little bit under it. But that kind of set the market, you know, for a guy like Bayo. And, you know, credit to Atlanta. Atlanta's the smartest team in baseball, I feel like, anyway. They got the best GM, Alex Anthopoulos.
And Terry, you know, I had a couple people on Twitter. They had responded to a couple of my tweets, and they were like, doesn't this seem like the Red Sox are almost stealing from Bayo, like that it's so low in terms of value? But it's like, this is what can happen when you operate early. Like the Red Sox, you know, with their players over the last, you know, 5-6 years, they've only operated as they've gotten right to free agency. And you've stated multiple times, you lose all leverage when you're right there at free agency. And the Red Sox have all the leverage in the world when they approach a player pre-arbitration. Like you have so much leverage because they'd be making league minimum essentially, you know, for this year and, you know, very little next year. So it's like, you know, this is the type of thing that can happen. And I think fans need to kind of realize this when, you know, Roman Anthony comes up, if he becomes what I think many think, and same thing with Marcelo Meyer, like if you approach these players early, you get an insane discount, you know, rather than waiting and waiting and waiting like we've seen the Red Sox do.
Nick, any thoughts?
I was just trying to date back a little bit to figure out when is the last homegrown guy that really got that extension that was more of a pitcher-esque. I know Garrett Whitlock and everything, but he really wasn't. He was from the Yankees. I'm trying to think of another player that was in our system that got the extension, that delivered, and was well worth every penny from it. Is it Buchholz?
I think it was Buchholz. I hadn't gotten to him yet. I was trying to pay attention to Micah's take.
I mean, that's a long time ago, guys. So, I mean, this in a way is pretty historic.
Yeah.
If you have to think about it with how this went down. So we are critical all the time of ownership and what they make for a move. Here's my little parade for them. Congratulations. You guys actually got it done. And you didn't screw this one up. So I got to give ownership credit here. They took care of this early on. And they are locking up a guy that they believe in. So whether it's right or wrong, I'm going to give them a shining star on this one because it was very much needed, I would have to say, for the fan base.
I've got the Buchholz deal up. I just can't find there. There had to have been an option in there. So he signed a 4-year extension in April of 2011. Yeah. But most of that was just buying up his arbitration. There must have been at least a 1-year, a 1-year option because he pitched with us through the 2016 season.
Correct.
But the other guy was just 2 years before that, John Lester. His yeah. extension's kind of, I mean, at the time it was probably comparable, but his extension was for 5 years, $30 million. So bought up some of the arbitration. It added one more year, just like Bayo received today. And then there was a 1-year option for 2014 on top of that. And of course, traded to Oakland that summer, made the 1-game wild card, and was eliminated by the Kansas City Royals, who went on to win the pennant, got to game 7 against the Giants, lost it, unfortunately, but won the World Series the following year. But yeah, so
the one that should have been here his whole career.
Those, and he's in Red Sox camp, by the way.
That he is, yeah.
Got announced, yeah. So there's some ties to Breslow. So I think that he was kind of the guy that paved the way for that. It wasn't John Henry calling him saying, "Hey, I'm not a bitter old man. Come back." No, it was Braille. It was.
Do you know who else is in camp, Terry? No joke. Rich Hill.
Yeah, well, he's broadcasting, I think, with Bradford. Yeah, everybody panicked with that tweet the other night. They're like, "Oh my God, he's in Fort Myers."
45-year-old Rich Hill, opening day starter. They're going to sign him. Red Sox. Here it comes.
I love Rich Hill, and I immediately forgave him when he got arrested at Foxborough. But he is so dry. I watch his interviews, and I fall asleep. He's just not animated at all. I love him, but he's just, I don't know. He just doesn't do it for me. I hope they don't put him in the Nesson booth. But, the other thing on Bayo, too, and this is, I think this kind of speaks to how bad we've been with extending our young talent. We don't really know Bayo, really. I mean, we don't know what his ceiling is. I think it's at least in the Marcus Stroman, and, you know, the ultimate fantasy is he starts punching guys out and, you know, becomes Pedro Light, but we don't really know. We don't know what the ceiling is. We're all fairly optimistic that it's going to work out for him. And Andrew Bailey will probably be the most influential pitching coach he has in his career, because I think Bailey's going to be here a while, despite Cora probably exiting. But so we don't really know who he is, really, talent-wise. We don't really know who he is as a person yet, but we get so excited because he's the first guy in so long that we've developed. And that was the big need to extend him, but we don't really know who he is. And he kind of rubbed me the wrong way in one of his early starts. It might've been his first, second or third start. There was like a couple of errors made. He should have gotten out of the inning and the defense let him down. And he was like, he put his glove to his face and started screaming in it. And I'm like, oh, you know, that just kind of, I don't want to be seeing that this early, you know. And eventually it's going to get to the point where the defense is going to be bailing him out at times because he's just not locating or whatever. So,
but I wonder if John Lackey was mentoring him.
Oh, really? John Lackey was...
he was known for that.
He was a douche, yeah. I remember a game, it was in Tropicana Field, and Daniel Nava was playing left field, and there was an error before him, unrelated to him, somewhere else, and then Nava loses it in the lights, because they got that ceiling. Like, it's hard sometimes.
Like, what are you doing?
And then you can read Lackey's lips as he's yelling out to center field. He basically said, "Catch the effing ball." He was so mad. He should have been out of the inning like 20 pitches before that, and his defense screwed him. Yeah. John Lackey's a guy, though. He had earned it by then. He was a World Series champ. And I think that did, actually, if it was Nava out there, that probably was 2013 when that happened. So he was well on his way to another ring. John Lackey pitched both the clinching games, by the way, ALCS, World Series.
He was a warrior in 2013.
Yeah, and he came out of the bullpen, too, in the Tigers series. Because Koji was, or it was either him or Tozawa, just needed, I think it was Tozawa, just needed a night off, so they sent Lackey out.
Oh, Craig Breslow needed the night off, too. He got worn out quite a bit in that playoff run, too.
They leaned on him pretty hard, yeah. But he was pretty good, though. That was by far his best... best run with the Red Sox. But yeah, so I'm just saying we Bayo hasn't yet endeared himself to us, and hopefully, you know, that'll happen. Go ahead.
You speak to the maturity. I mean, he was only 23 last year, and I think it's kind of hard to, I think sometimes you forget how young these guys really are.
True.
And I can remember, I think it was a start in Anaheim, probably in like May, but Alex Cora went out, I think, in like the first or second inning, and he didn't go out with anybody else, not the pitching coach, or there was nobody around but him and Bayo. And I don't know what he said to him, but he was clearly not happy with Bayo.
Oh.
And, you know, it was like an example of what you were speaking to, is like, he doesn't quite know how to, you know, keep his composure on the mound. But a contract like this, it does kind of require you to grow up quickly, I think. Like, you kind of lose the, well, it's only his second year. But you know what? You got paid your second year. So you do have to take on a little bit more responsibility, I think, now that he has paid. He's been paid. So I agree with you. I think the maturity of Bayo is something to definitely watch for throughout the course of this season.
And then from a performance standpoint, he has to get lefties out. The strikeout rate needs to go up a little bit. And then he needs his batting average against with lefties to get, it's over 300 right now. So that needs to come down, you know, 100 points.
That's a good note that you brought up right there, because that was one thing that I had in my notes too, where if you're going to get over that hump and everything and become a solidified piece of your rotation, that's a big improvement that's going to be needed. Absolutely agreed.
And then he had this wonky, I don't really read into this too much, but day games, not good at all. Night games, yeah, he was fine.
Splits were so very off last season.
That's just kind of a wonky one, but we'll see. Like I said, it's on him, like Micah said, to kind of, you know, gain a little bit more maturity. And then hopefully the Andrew Bailey effect kind of, you know, meets him halfway and they get all that resolved. So let's, you know what, let's, one little tidbit came out today. We're going to get to Casas in a second here, but one little tidbit about the Giolito deal, and it was tweeted by Rob Bradford. The Red Sox did not insure that deal, so they're going to be on the hook for all $38.5 million of it, and that's just like, I would think that page one in the GM manual would, somewhere on page one, it would say, the second you sign a player, you call Geico and you get him insured. that's like GM 101. How does that slip? How does that slip? This is the ultimate bad karma for John Henry. That's what it is now. It's just karma at this point, just piling itself on this organization. And I mentioned the other night, you're paying 37 this year to Giolito and Sale. Two guys, one guy that's going to potentially pitch against you, the other guy's not going to pitch for you. And, you know, after this long, hard winter where all we needed was two starting pitchers and a right-handed bat, you end up with a net negative for starting pitchers, and then Nick Pivetta, who's never held it down in his career as a starter, as recently as last year, demoted to the bullpen. He's your number two. So that was an interesting tidbit today. Giolito is going to get a second opinion from someone in Alabama. I don't think that's Dr. James Andrews, but
this is the same doctor that did the Tommy John surgery for Garrett Whitlock.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, that didn't pan out too well. He had elbow issues last year. Yeah. But go ahead, Micah.
Do you know, I honestly have no idea to this question, but I would imagine teams get the insurance on like mega deals, like for sure. But are they, do you think it's common on one and, you know, 2 year deals as this could have been with Giolito? Like, do you think they get that on all players, or do you think it's mainly multi-year deals where the insurance is something that they seek? Or I really have no idea. I just was curious sitting here making you talking about it, like, is that something every team gets on 1 year players, even if it's, you know, at a significant value like Giolito's was?
I honestly don't have any idea either. No, I'd be guessing no too. One came at me after I posted it with any information, you know, pertaining to that.
My only thing I would think is that if it went for like anything over 100 million, I think that would just automatically scream, okay, as a business owner, just for myself, I would want to make sure I would be protected, like, you know, in my investment in case something would go wrong. I was stunned to hear this news when it came out, because I thought every pitcher in baseball who had a big deal of some sorts would want protection on that. So yeah, I was really surprised.
And you know, Bradford was, I think, the one who broke that news this morning. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
So like he made it, you know, he put it out there on purpose, like it was intentional. And, you know, last year when Corey Kluber went down for half the year or whatever, like, we never heard anything. Like, did they get insurance on him? Like, I don't know how that all works. But, like, I don't recall the Red Sox this really being mentioned on other players. I think maybe Dustin Pedroia was one, but they had such a long-term investment in him. But, like, he was intentional about putting the fact that they did not get insurance on him. So I guess this was either an option or something that should have been considered, probably because of the AAV that he was given for his deal. I don't know. It seemed like the way it was reported that the Red Sox should have gotten insurance on Giolito, but did not.
Well, he's the third highest paid player on the team annually. So, I mean, that sounds significant to me. In Kluber's case, on a one-year deal, I mean, that's one-fourth the overall value of Giolito's deal. So that wouldn't shock me on that. That's, you know, you're taking a flyer there. And I knew right away it was going to burn them. When they told me he had only thrown 36 fastballs the previous season with Tampa, I knew we were cooked. I'm like, there's just no way that's going to work at Fenway. But, you know, it is what it is. Let's move over to Casas. Now, this Bayo thing, as we said, it's all fine and good, but it's not gonna change the narrative that Boston is now finally investing in their young people if they don't do it with Casas too. They have to do it with Casas to really change that narrative. And he did say today, I forget which beat writer tweeted it, but the Red Sox have not re-engaged in any contract negotiations with him. They did make an offer earlier in the winter, but it was said to not be appetizing, I think is the way Casas put it. We don't know what that number was. I would bet money that it was probably also in the 60 to 80 million range, which would be, to me, a slap in the face. Like, you can't do that. But Micah, so what's the likelihood, do you think, that it does get done here?
I don't think it's going to get done at least during the season. Like, I think this is going to be something that is more of a next year discussion. I think there's a good chance that it does get done, especially if he continues to say, I want to be a Red Sox here, and like he stated. But the problem is, if he has a monster season, the price probably doubles or, you know, goes up 25% of what it would have been this year. So I don't know if they're going if they had a chance to sign him for, say he wanted 100 or 110 million and he has a big year this year. And then next year he goes, well, I want 175, you know, are the Red Sox going to be like, well, we could have got you at 110. We're not going anywhere near 175 now. Like, I just wonder how they're going to view this situation. Eventually you're going to have to give in a little bit to get this guy. I don't know what the ultimate number is going to be. I saw some really low numbers on Twitter today from national reporters. I just was kind of surprised. I think I saw like between 70 and 80 million. I just think that's way too low, unless you're only signing him for 5 or 6 years. And if you're going to do that, you might also just keep him on his current, you know, rookie contract. So I think the only way that this gets done is if it's really like a 7 to 8 year deal. I would probably say 8 years. And then, you know, you kind of go off of some of the top first baseman in the league, but that is more towards the end of the contract. You know, you bump up his AAV early in the deal, but, you know, the big money doesn't really come around till later in the deal. But this deal, like you said, this is one that has to get done. And I honestly think Casas is probably more important than Bayo. I think it is. I think just the way the Red Sox have promoted him this offseason, it feels like they almost want him to take the face of the franchise type role. I still think that's going to be Devers. I think Devers will speak when he needs to, but Casas likes the attention. And I think the Red Sox like him, and they think he's very promotable. So I think you have to find a happy medium here, and you need to figure out a way to keep this guy in Boston. You know, how many years did we talk about this guy as, well, he's the future first baseman? It felt like for at least two or three seasons, like Bobby Dalbec's first year, I felt like we were talking, well, Tristan Casas is coming. Like, it just eventually you have to say, we've waited for this guy to be the guy we're hoping to be, he's going to be, and he turned out to be that. Now give him the deal and make him a part of your, you know, the cornerstone of your team. So I think it has a chance to get done, but I don't think it's going to get done in terms of how the Red Sox want it to get done, and at a cheap, really cheap discounted rate. I just don't see it. And if they wait one more year, it's really not going to be at a discounted rate.
Nick.
I'm going to go at this at a different angle. I respect everything Mike has said regarding Casas, and I like the player. I do. There's no question in my mind from it. But the problem here for me is I don't – if I was John Henry currently right now, I feel like I don't have enough of a sample size yet to see who Tristan Casas really is as a major league player. We had the beginnings of April – where I know so many of us are on here screaming and yelling to get up. What was the catcher? Alfaro, to come up and play first base. I was guilty.
Me too.
I was guilty. And then we started to see Casas kind of start to figure it out and everything. Then the injury happened. Lit the world on fire from when he was, you know, June, July, even parts of May from everything that was right there. But this is an investment here that I feel what's in the best interest of the Red Sox right now is kind of to ride this one out here a little bit, even if it means spending more money, because you already felt like you had to do one thing that was important. I felt the Bayo extension here was most important. Needless to say, our pitching, we have not developed pitching probably within the last 10 years. We've already mentioned Clay Buchholz's name on this podcast here tonight. To have a pitcher that you can develop and to have as a long-term option in your rotation, you couldn't say that. You couldn't say that for the past 5-6 years. You just couldn't. So that to me is exciting. It's exciting to have that piece. Now, what is Tristan Casas going to be? Yes. Is he highly marketable? Absolutely. He's a character. No question in my eyes. I just look at this a little bit on a different angle and say, I think that he got a lot of hype from having such a great couple months. What is it going to look like over the long haul of a season? I very much want this guy to be a superstar. I very much want him to be here long term. But when it comes to what the dollar signs and everything look at for what he's going to have for an extension, that makes me a little nervous right now. Especially leading into a big question mark here of what 2024 is going to look like. I don't want to see Tristan Casas go through what we saw at the beginning portions of last year, where we all wanted him back down to Worcester. So let's see the development here a little bit longer. I want to see how spring training settles in for him. Want to make sure his health looks good. And maybe Craig Breslow does surprise you, and maybe Casas does surprise us and everything, and hits the world on fire, and we do see something happen. Not this season, but as of next season's off season. That's where my mind is at with where I think an extension could lead to. If it happens, I'm looking more for next year, not the right now portion.
Nick, do you think Brian Bayo has proven more than Tristan Casas in terms of earning that extension?
I felt a little bit. That's a good question that you had there. It wasn't like miles and miles above, but I do feel that the Red Sox felt that because their pitching had been so undeveloped over the years, this was one that I don't think they wanted to make a mistake on again, was seeing somebody else leave this team and them being, once again, shorthanded on the depth. I think this was a move that needed to get done, and I'm excited to see what Bayo's going to do. I think developmental-wise, working with Pedro, working with Andrew Bailey and everything there, I think that we're going to see something very good for this guy. Maybe not an ace, but somebody who can lock down and take some innings here and be a quality starting pitcher in Major League Baseball.
That's fair. Terry, before you give your take, do you think Bayo proved more than Casas so far to earn that extension?
No. No. I mean, from June forward last year, Casas was third in all of MLB in OPS. So it may not seem like it because those first 2 months were just so bad. Like those were, you couldn't have gotten off to a worse start offensively, defensively. The dude looked lost. I mean, he couldn't put the bat on the ball. He was drawing walks all 6 months of the season, but there was just a glitch there, and it was mostly mental. But then after that, I mean, man, if you could just on opening day, just fast forward to what his final numbers were, a 265 average, a mid threes on base, and I think 20 something home runs, if I'm not mistaken, you're like, okay, wow, good year. So, you know, I think that was basically kind of a breakout year. This next year could be the next stratosphere type year. And that's why it's so critical to get it done now. And I just crunched some numbers here. Here's a team friendly deal that is palatable. I feel like it's not going to hurt, even if it doesn't work out. But I would give Tristan Casas $15 million a year, or at least an average annual value of $15 million a year for 7 years. That's $105 million. I would tack two option years onto that at 25 apiece. And so that would extend him out for 9 years. I don't have his thing up right now. He's what, 24, I think?
Yes.
Okay, 24 years old. So that would bring him to his age 33 season. Again, another season, another year where the Red Sox would have a ton of leverage. Okay, because what's a 33-year-old baseball player going to get? It's not going to be a 10-year deal at that point. So this would take him to a point in his career where you could probably come back with a 4 or 5 year extension in his age 32 season to tack on to the current one. And that's how you keep Tristan Casas here for his entire career. And I think at $15 million a year, it won't be $15 million a year because we've seen how they structured Bayo's deal. So Bayo, super light, only making $1 million this year, $2.5 million next year, $6 million the year after that. It would be similar with Casas, and then those back years would be in the 20s, right around where I put the options at $25 million apiece. That's how you get it done. And so that would max the contract out at $155 million if the options are picked up. I think that's reasonable. If he does have that off the charts year this year, an MVP caliber year, I would not be shocked if he's in the top five for AL MVP or top 10 even. If that happens, you're add $100 million to that next winter because now Casas has all the leverage. He has all the leverage. Twice in his interview with Rob Bradford, this was a few weeks ago when it was revealed that extension, an offer had been made. Twice in that interview, he said, "I don't need much." So that tells me right away he's not, you know, he's realistic with his expectations. He's not looking for Bobby Witt Jr. money. And that's the bat signal that the Red Sox need. And if you're going to do nothing else this winter, and I really think we are, I don't think Jordan Montgomery's coming. I don't think Trevor Bauer is coming. If you're going to do nothing else, get the Casas deal done. Get that deal done. And I think Casas would be open to it. You know, this deal could happen in May. I don't think he's the type of guy who's just going to shut it down. He's not going to give this arbitrary deadline of opening day like some players do. So, But the Red Sox have to get it done within the first half of the season. I would say that. And preferably before it even starts. Micah.
I've stated this before, but something I would like to see them do is, you know, the Julio Rodriguez deal has so many incentives built into the contract. And I think that's a great way to get players that are super young that you think are superstar caliber players to accept these deals. Like you were talking $25 million for those option years. But what if he finishes in the top 10? That jumps from 20 in the top 10 of the MVP. It jumps from $25 million to either 30 or $35 million. Like, you know, give him that incentive that, you know, if you end up being the player that we think you can be and you believe you can be, you can get paid like the top first baseman in the league. Now, at that time, who knows what first basemen are really going to be paid as the, you know, the premium at the position. But, you know, just give him that, that incentive that if you get anywhere near the MVP voting, you can make more. Because if Tristan Casas ends up being an MVP caliber player, that is going to help this organization win a lot of games. So you're not losing by giving him an extra $5 or even $10 million for performance-based incentives. Like you're gaining because he's becoming an incredible bat. And I just, we haven't seen the creativity from the Red Sox with these deals. I mean, this, the Bayo one was the first one we've seen, but there wasn't a lot of creativity in that deal. And I think the Casas deal is a great opportunity for them to look at some other deals and the creativity that other organizations used and start being creative with your own deals. I think it's a great chance.
I like the touch. I like Terry's idea of the 7-105. I thought that's an excellent number. I like everything about that. If that's what it was going to be, truthfully, I would say do the deal right now. I would go back on my thing and I would say do the deal. Those numbers look fantastic. And that could work. And I like the incentivized option. I think that gets you motivated to want to get over that hump. I mean, look what they do in the NBA with all those accolades and stuff that they get. You know, stuff like that should trigger more interest from other teams and trying to strike it rich with these young guys.
Another deal, and I know I've brought this up before, and so do, you know, people in the media and you know, regular people on social media. But you look at the Acuna deal, 8 years, $100 million with options attached to that. You know, so this would, and now Acuna signed that before Julio Rodriguez got his, before Franco got his, before I think even Tatis got his deal. So you know, had Acuna come along a few years later, maybe it's significantly more than 100. But I think the framework I just laid out, that's 155. So I think that is somewhat significant, you know, more so than Acuna. I mean, this is insane. I think I've got his, yeah, right here. So Acuna last season, 2023, only made $17 million, won the MVP, and he's only going to make $17 million annually for the rest of the deal. So he's got three more guaranteed years and then two more option years each at $17 million. So, I mean, he should be getting twice that. That's what he's really worth.
Are those options team or player options?
Team,
just out of curiosity.
Team options.
So I think that's what you were kind of speaking to earlier with, like, down the road with the contract, if you have team options built into it at a significant discount compared to what the market is actually getting, then you can say, you know, 2 or 3 years before that happens, let's revisit a contract extension, and the team still has all the leverage in the world, because Acuna should be making, like you said, at least $35 million a year based on the production he does on the field. But, you know, he has 3 years and then potentially two more. That's 5 years. That's the rest of his prime years and his best years where he's not – going to be paid anywhere near a premium outfielder. And the Braves, if they really wanted to keep him through his age 36, 37, 38 season, whatever they want to do, they could do that at a much cheaper rate if they actually do it now and then take away those $17 million team options. And I think that's what you were talking about with the, you know, the Casas deal or the Bayo deal. Like, you can revisit an extension when you have the player still at a significant discount down the road because they want to make more. They want to make market value, and you can give them closer to that by negotiating more years.
Yeah, it's twofold. It's one, it's a way for the team to keep its leverage because they're like, well, we're just going to exercise these if you don't want to negotiate. But number two, early on, it's still, you know, $155 million to Casas right now today is like, you know, that changes your family for generations, you know? And so it's appealing to Casas on the front end, but it's appealing to the Red Sox on the back end. And with Acuna, if they do exercise both options, the last one's in 2028, that's his age 30 season. He's still a very young player, so he could still conceivably get a mega deal at age 30 and still play this original contract out. Maybe after 2026, the Braves, you know, reapproach him. I don't know, like, could you give him a $250 million deal over 8 years? I mean, that'd be 25 per, or no, that would be 200. So that would be a 10-year deal the way I was thinking about it. But still, but yeah. You could, I don't think he's going to get max value if he signs before the end of his option years. He's not going to get the 35. He probably tops out at 28 to 30 a year, but that's still pretty good.
But he could wait till his age 30 season.
Right.
And we just saw Manny Machado in his age 30 season. Didn't he get 10 and 300?
He did, yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
So he could bet on himself. Now, he has had some injury issues, but he could bet on himself. And, you know, 4 years down the road or whenever – I think you said 5 more years down the road?
Yes.
So is he really only 25 years old?
He is, yeah. And
oh my gosh,
he'll be 26 this year.
I feel so old.
Birthday. That is insane. I feel like he's been in the league forever.
Oh, so he just turned 26 in December. Okay.
So he'd be 31 then when the 31. Deal. Okay.
That winter he'll be 31.
But he could still sign an 8 or 9 year deal. But at that time, you know, in 5 years, does the league expand in 5 years? I mean, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But imagine how much money could be in the game where, you know, maybe superstar, the top five players in the league are not making 30 or 35 million, but they're making 45 million, 50 million. Like, it, in theory, it could make sense for him to just kill it the next 5 years, wait it out, and then he signs a 8 or 9 year deal for like $450 million. Like, but the Braves could prevent that with, you know, saying we'll give you an 8 year deal for 325 or something like that. Like, they're going to have to get creative, but I think you're not going to get a $200 million player when he's really probably worth $400 million or $500 million. Like, it's going to be interesting.
It would have to be 250 at 10, but I'm conceding that that's probably a little low.
Yeah. I was going to say, too, just remember, it's the Braves. They have so much creativity with the amount of moves that they can make to make it happen. I give them full faith in doing something to keep Acuna there long term.
I do think, though, that he would probably hate the idea of playing somewhere else at this point. I mean, who has ever left the Atlanta Braves for another team and said, man, I hated Atlanta. It's just, it's a great organization.
Freddie Freeman wishes he was still there.
He couldn't believe it didn't happen. He said, there was no doubt in my mind I was going to finish my career here, and it didn't happen. And so, and maybe that's a lesson to Acuna. If playing there really
it's a good point.
Means something to him. So I think they'll make it happen. I mean, he's going to be filthy rich. Like someone, I remember during the Harper and Machado year, we thought they were both going to get 400. That we thought that was the year. That's what all the speculation was all winter long, that one of those two would be the first players to do it. And they came in way under. But I just, someone told me, they said, well, how much is enough? You know, like 200 is like, you know, you're going to, you'd have to like do a lot of drugs, buy a million Ferraris, you know, to blow through that. You know what I mean?
Well, what can't you do with 250 million that you can, or what? Yeah, what can't you do with 250 million that you can no longer do with 300 million? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
What is another $50 million or $75 million at that number? It's like you can pretty much do whatever you want at $250 million. You really don't need $350 million.
And like, if you got smart business people, you know, in your portfolio, they're going to turn that 250 into 750 at some point through investments or businesses and all that, you know.
Just don't live in California.
Yeah, exactly. Or Toronto. I mean, Canada is a really, really tough place for taxes. New York as well. But yeah, so it is what it is. So we'll monitor the Casas market. Hopefully the Red Sox can figure that one out. One other guy apparently has had extension talks. This shouldn't be too difficult to get done. Tanner Houck. I would expect him to get, if the deal happened before the start of the season, I would expect him to be more in the Whitlock area than the Bayo area. I think Whitlock got like $19 million guaranteed with a couple of options that get him up to close to 30, I think. So I bet Houck probably comes in around then. Now, if Bailey fixes him and he gets through that order the third time and he stays healthy, his market could look a lot different next winter. So
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Tanner Houck will be one of your comeback players of the year for the team. I don't know if it will be for MLB, but I think that Andrew Bailey's going to fix him and fix him for the right reasons. I'm excited for Houck.
I want to see one more year as a starter.
I do too.
If he's getting crushed by June and it's the same narrative, I'll probably.
Do you ever get the vibes of Tanner Houck of, do you remember Justin Masterson?
Yes, I do.
Tall, lanky, power pitcher kind of, and then he just got injury prone and just never was the same.
Right.
But the beginning portions of Justin Masterson was a bona fide stud.
Yeah. Yeah, Justin Masterson was a great interview too. If you ever, you could probably pull some stuff on YouTube. There was a spring training in 2015. I've told this story at least once, where he was pitching and Blake Swihart was our top catching prospect. Hadn't debuted yet, I don't think. And he was the guy who was going to be in the Cole Hamels package if the Hamels deal happened. And he kept telling Swihart, he goes, you might not be catching me today. You might be a Philadelphia Philly before the morning is out. And just razzing him a little bit. And he's just a funny guy. But Swihart never got traded, unfortunately. I didn't really want him to be traded, but in hindsight, we would have made
out. Red Sox ruined him, moved him around in all these different positions, and then screwed everything up mentally for him.
Yeah, he was a bad defensive catcher, though. Like, he never going to overcome that. The dude had wheels, could get around the bases, and showed some flashes with the bat in the second half of 2015. We were out of it.
I always thought it was going to be Swihart over Vasquez coming up. I really did.
I did too. I didn't think the bat was ever going to show up for Vasquez.
Me neither.
Yeah. Do you have something, Micah?
I mean, Blake Swihart, that's a blast from the past.
We're reminiscing.
Really. But if we go back to Houck, I see zero reason to talk an extension with him. I want to see him be a productive big league starting pitcher for an entire season. Because if he's a reliever, he's gonna make significantly less than what you would give if you think he's a starter. I just think I'd wait, and if he ends up being great, it's good for the team. And next year you just end up paying a little bit more. He's not gonna break the bank unless he goes out and wins a Cy Young. So I just don't see that happening. But if he's a productive pitcher, you know, around a 4 ERA for 25 starts, I don't think he ends up being. I think you could get a Whitlock-like deal at that time next offseason. So I'm wait and see completely on Tanner Houck.
Well, he does not become a free agent until his age 32 season. So that just kind of speaks to the fact that there really doesn't need to be a rush. And yeah, I would be fine with that.
You probably want to get like similar to Bayo. You'd probably want like one additional year, maybe two additional years. Like you're not looking for 4 more years or 5 more years of Houck at that time, because it'll be 35, 36 then if you would extend him like that. Like maybe you want him in his 33 season, but like not that much further probably, because he has shown zero ability to throw even 100 and I think 25 innings, 150 innings. He's been nowhere near that in his career. So I'm with you. 32, like get him to 32 and say thank you for the years.
I'm supremely confident he can be an eighth or ninth inning guy. I think he could be that. And I think he has a future because of that. It's whether he can start or not. And then be number one, get through the rotation, get through the lineup the third time, and then B, stay healthy. I mean, he's had a back problem. He's had, you know, I think he got hit with a comebacker this past year. So that wasn't really, that's just a.
I mean, his name keeps coming up as that guy that was going to take over for Kenley Jansen for closer if Jansen was gone. So it's still, and I think you guys would agree, figuring out where he slots in. Is he a starter? Is he a long relief? Is he mid relief? Is he a closer? I think there's still a lot of question marks here. I'm in the camp where I want to see him be a starter. I think that's where his best asset is for this team right now. But it's up to him to prove that and be healthy. That's the big thing that he's got to get over. Build that arm up and be somebody they can count on.
I think in the bullpen, health would not be a factor as much. And I've harped on this quite a bit, but I love his composure. That dude does not rattle. He's got a poker face. Dennis Eckersley calls him Cool Hand Luke. And then you see Whitlock out there, who I'm still somewhat optimistic he's going to be a viable reliever at a minimum. But I don't like his composure at all. I think
he stresses me out so much
just by looking at him. And
really?
Yeah, he just doesn't.
Oh, man, he was nails in the 2021 playoffs. That guy was nails, and he wanted the ball.
Just body language. He's sweaty. Yeah. He starts breathing through his mouth. Like pay attention to it this year. Yeah, and then Bogarts.
He's giving birth on the mound.
Your shortstop would have to come in to calm him down. Bogarts would go to the mound and just talk to him for a minute to get him back to his baseline. And I love Garrett Whitlock. I do. Yeah. And I want him to work, and I think he will work. But if I'm going to wager on it, I'm taking Houck. I like the composure. I like the stuff. And the dude's been
the makeup sets it up.
He's had bad luck with health, and they haven't committed to him it one way or another for any one specific role. So we'll see what happens.
We saw Garrett Whitlock, though. He had a sub 2 ERA in 2021. Like there is evidence that he can be an elite reliever. Whereas Houck, I think he can be a really good reliever against right-handed bats, but lefties kill him.
He does have a lefty problem.
And the lefties, I mean, in the ninth inning, you can't be like, well, we can't bring him in this inning because they have three lefties coming up. Like, when he's your closer, he's your closer. And if there's three lefties coming up, I got to be honest, I don't like Tanner Houck at all in that scenario. Now, maybe this year. I know he was working on that splitter last year, so maybe second year with that pitch, and you know, Andrew Bailey working with him, maybe the splitter becomes an elite weapon, and that is his neutralizer against a lefty. But he needs something to neutralize left-handed hitters, or I really don't think he can be a consistent, reliable reliever in the back end of the bullpen.
Just take the Dodgers Brazier approach. Give him a cutter. That's all they did. I'll never forgive Dave Bush for that. We went through years of anguish, you know, wanting Brazier off the team, and it took forever to do it. And then he lands in LA, and they're like, dude, just throw a cutter and you'll be amazing. And that's what happened. And then he got a 2-year deal. He got a really nice 2-year deal. Let me see if I can find it.
It's like 2 for $10 million or something like that.
Two for ten. It rings a bell for him. Yeah.
10.5, something like that.
Yep.
2-year deal, $9 million. Okay. All right. I thought it was in the 12 to 14 range, but still, that's big money for Brazier.
And he had a 6.5 ERA with the Red Sox last season in May. So that's remarkable that he could get even more than a 1-year, you know, minor league or spring training invite. The fact that he got a 2-year deal, that just shows how dominant he was with the Dodgers.
I think one of the most significant things this team did in the offseason for the Red Sox is the coaching shakeup. I really do. I think there were some guys that were on that crew that were just there for the ride.
Let's see. With the Dodgers last year. Okay. So actually, Micah, you were wrong. He had a 7.29 ERA with the Red Sox.
We forgot a few games.
I would call that way off. And with the Dodgers, just guess what it was.
Wow.
I'm kidding.
With the Dodgers, he had a 1.22 ERA. I don't know.
Okay,
like
this
that.
Is borderline way off. I'm not kidding this time. He had a 0.70 ERA with the Dodgers.
It's just stupid. It's stupid.
How?
I know.
How?
I know. I don't. Like, it doesn't make sense.
Doesn't that just make Dave Bush look like?
Just go to the Dodgers. Everything's going to come up better. I mean, look at JD Martinez. Goes and has an incredible year for himself. I mean, that's what they do. They fix the Red Sox cast-offs.
And they just said, dude, throw a cutter. That's it.
And Brazier isn't the only example. Like, we could find other pitchers that left, like that Zach Littrell.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's a starting pitcher with Tampa now.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. The Red Sox couldn't. I think they had him for less than 10 days, and then they DFA'd him or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And if he was on the Red Sox right now, based on what he was with Tampa last year, we'd probably be saying he might be our fifth starter. Like, but he wasn't good enough to even be a bullpen pitcher on that team that year. Like, and that was a team that finished in last place. He wasn't good enough to be a bullpen pitcher on a last place team, but he's good enough to be a starting pitcher for the Tampa Bay Rays. That just screams Dave Bush just was an absolute joke.
You know how all things happen in threes? So you had Ryan Brazier, JD Martinez. Where would we be without mentioning even Kike Hernandez turning his season around when he went back to the Dodgers? I mean,
yeah.
It's just crazy. It's crazy.
Just recently signed with them. Another guy that got plucked from us that we thought never would amount to anything, Jeffrey Springs with the Tampa Bay Rays, got a nice extension and then blew his elbow out like all the Tampa pitchers did last season. But Dave Bush was not the guy. That the three things. Now I've exonerated Chaim Bloom for the most part. I think he was constricted, and it just wasn't going to work out. However, there are still three things that it's hard to forgive him for. Number one, not firing Dave Bush at least after 2022. Number two, drafting all shortstops, no pitching, and then number three. Every stud prospect we have is a lefty. And so it's a very unbalanced organization right now in a lot of ways. And one of those big three are going to get dealt. And that's probably a conversation for another show. But yeah, let's just wrap it on that. I don't think the slander was too heavy for once. I think we said some nice things and distracted ourselves.
Held out what we needed to get out for the moment.
Yeah. I honestly, I feel almost slightly positive. Sometimes when recently when we've been podcasting, I'm like, yeah, boy, that was really negative. I feel a little negative leaving, but now I don't feel that way tonight. So I think we accomplished something.
I'm still going to take a shower right after we get off of here. But but yeah, and we did distract ourselves with a little bit of Acuna talk. So that, you know, that kind of helps. But all right. So this is Friday morning for everyone. So we'll probably be back Sunday night, maybe Monday, but certainly no later than that. So everyone have a good end of your week. Have a good weekend. Hopefully the weather is good for you. It's getting hot down here in South Carolina. We've had the AC on, but yes, have a good weekend, and we'll be back with you soon. Take care.